Good afternoon, Simon Pluska, editor-in-chief for Honest Reporting. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right, thank you. We're talking about the royal baby, because apparently the name is going to incorporate the best of America and the best of Britain. So you've got a history. What would you name the baby?
Well, I tell you what, you know, I'm originally British, my wife's American, so, you know, my kids are the best of both worlds as well.
So you could actually call him Pluska Windsor.
That would work.
I think we'll give that one a miss.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Simon, instead of talking about the news this week, this weekend, from Saturday morning until Monday morning, there was... how many? Do we have a total tally of how many rockets?
We do now. It is apparently 690.
So what happened to the 10? They were so schnup. They left out the 10. Listen, I'm being facetious. But it was happening where you were. What was that personal experience like when you've got Hamas firing rockets into Israel? That's like one every 3 minutes. One rocket every 3 minutes for over 48 hours.
And you know what? It felt like it as well. I went down to the south with a group of journalists, and the experience was quite something. I've been on these trips before, north, south. You know, unfortunately, I've been in my position now enough years to have seen a fair bit of action. But this was, we said 690 rockets. It was quantitatively different. We went down to Ashkelon at first, and we visited the site where Moshe Agadi, a 58-year-old father of four, was killed by shrapnel from a rocket that hit his home.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there were a lot of people milling around, soldiers, police, damage assessors, and, of course, journalists. And what was interesting was, you know, you kind of expect when a rocket strikes something that everything explodes. What we got to see was what the real damage is from one of these horrific rockets, because it didn't hit the house directly. It caused a crater in sort of the area of the garden, knocked down a wall. But the shrapnel itself, you could see what it had done, because there were pock marks all over the walls of the house. The windows had been blown out. But I think what was obviously worse about this was the simple fact that this poor guy had managed to get his family into the safe room, but the shrapnel had come into the house and killed him. And, you know, that really is just a horrific thing to happen. And what really brought it home was, whilst we were there, all these journalists were there, and we had a siren. But we didn't just have one siren. We had three sirens in the space of literally a couple of minutes. What we didn't know was we were in the middle of apparently a 50-rocket barrage on Ashkelon. Now, just to describe what happened, we kind of all ran into this house, a house where there were family members still mourning the loss of their, you know, of Moshe Agadi. And there was not enough room in the safe room. It was out of space. Essentially, people crammed in there. I found myself crouching down in the best place I could find. And you have to wait. You have to wait for the siren to end. And during this time, we're hearing booms outside. And, you know, you're told really by the home front command, you need to wait 10 minutes after a siren has finished before you emerge, hopefully from the safety of your reinforced room, which of course I wasn't in at this point. And twice we left after a few minutes. We did, some of us are Israeli, we don't follow instructions. And the sirens went off again. And certainly the third time, I mean, I remember, I've been in a lot of rocket attacks before, and, you know, they're not pleasant experiences. But this one, the explosions outside, the booms, they literally shook the house. And this was the first time I can remember where I was actually quite scared. And when I walked out eventually, I realized I was actually trembling. You know, probably from the adrenaline. I mean, I wasn't, like, petrified, but I was told afterwards, and I can say it here because none of them are going to be listening. A lot of the journalists I was with, they were actually extremely frightened to the extent that they wanted to go home. They wanted to leave and get out of the firing range. And you know what? I'm happy. I'm happy that they went through this experience because I think it needs to be done for these journalists to realize the suffering of people in the south of Israel who had to go through this. And it was also very, very telling that when we left the area and we tried to get down further south to one of the kibbutzim on the border of Gaza, we couldn't get there because the road had been blocked by the police and the army because Hamas had fired an anti-tank missile at a civilian car, killing the guy in there. And we couldn't get down there. But whilst we were waiting to see if the road was going to be reopened, there were booms everywhere. I mean, the sirens were not going off, but you could hear boom, boom, boom as the Iron Dome was intercepting what amounted to eventually hundreds of these Palestinian rockets. And, you know, it sounded like a war zone. And it really was an incredible experience. And I really don't want to go through that again, but it was really quite horrific.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, both my children live in Israel, and my daughter lives in a suburb called Rehovot. And they did have sirens, but largely not so much. But it was all the suburbs around them that had sirens, all those different municipalities and areas around Rehovot. And she said that they were actually sitting there, and while they didn't have to go into bomb shelters, they were hearing the booms, and she said it is unbelievably, unbelievably loud. And you wait for them. She said, you know, when the siren goes off, it's not a problem. You know what to do. You go into the bomb shelter, you wait, you do your thing. But between the sirens, that's when it does all the mental and the emotional damage because you're anticipating it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and when you're not in range of a safe room. Now, we want a minibus going down south. And the protocol for that is if the siren goes off, you have to get off the bus and lie down on the side of the road and presumably at that point start praying. But, you know, I sat at the back of this minibus, which had one exit, and you've got 15 seconds. Now, imagine if the siren goes off, the driver still has to pull over and then everyone has to get out. There was no way we were all going to get out in time. And you realize that, quite frankly, you know, there's an element of potluck.
More than just an element. Simon, from my perspective, I might be completely wrong, but it appears to me that there was almost universal condemnation by the international press this time, surprisingly. Would that be correct, or have I not been reading all the press?
It was a mixture. I would say that it was actually better than usual. Most of the press, to be fair, realized where this had started, how it had started, and who had started it. Normally we have a thing where, you know, it all starts when Israel fires back. In this case, they realized it all started when Hamas and Islamic Jihad fired hundreds of rockets. However, the one major thing we did see was this charge that Israel was responsible for the death of a pregnant Palestinian and a baby. This was disputed by the IDF. I've been told by the IDF themselves that they have the intelligence and they know for a fact that this was actually a Palestinian rocket that misfired and killed these people. But there were quite a few media outlets that wouldn't even report that this was in dispute. They preferred to have it fit their framework that Israel kills innocent Palestinian civilians, particularly, of course, you know, pregnant women and children and babies.
Yeah, better headlines. And in that regard, I saw a campaign in the UK, London bus stops, where they made a bit of a spiel about that incident. I think Jeremy Corbyn's son was involved.
Something that happens on occasion. They're a bunch of, well, let's call them vandals, because they essentially hijack advertising space on these bus stops and put messages about how Israel's killing people, civilians, Palestinians. And this is nothing to do with the advertising agency. They want these things removed. But, of course, it's a question of spotting these things and getting them taken down as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and then just as I said, apparently one of the main culprits was Jeremy Corbyn's son, very supportive, obviously, of every possible anti-Israel endeavor that has ever been undertaken or will be.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
No, absolutely not.
Simon Pluska, that is where we leave it this week, and may it just, you know, may peace be something that just rains down on Israel instead of those tulim. It's very interesting. I was actually saying to somebody on one of my WhatsApp groups that the gematria, the numerological value of tulim is the same as the numerological value of tehillim. And we know that where the gematria is the same, there's always a relationship.
Well, I'm going to pray that we don't see any more of them. And then I'm going to go and celebrate Independence Day in a few hours.
Amazing. And happy Independence Day to you.